Nutrition advice on Talk About in association with Anne D'Arcy and the All Therapy Centre Tralee.
Now, lovely to have Anne in studio with us this afternoon. And speaking of barbecues, I've often wondered this. Is food that's barbecued healthier?
You know, that's a bit of a loaded question. It's fantastic because it's fresh food. People are putting a lot of fresh food. If you're putting on fresh chicken, fresh steak on the barbecue, what you don't want is the oil dripping into coals. There's acrylamides. It's a chemical that comes up from, that rises from barbecue. I'd love to say it's the best food ever. Just protect it. Don't be over burning your meat. That blackened meat is not as good. I know it's beautiful to smell it and you walk down the road and your mouth is watering, but just be careful and mindful of over burning the meat and allowing the fumes that are coming up from the burnt meat going onto the coals. And you'd say, well, how can we prevent that? It's difficult. So I think I love barbecued food. So I would say eat lots of good vegetables and fruits, you know, making salads with loads of fruits and get all the antioxidants in at the same time that you're getting in the meat maybe. And then if there is any damage done to that meat and it's going into your body, put in the neutralizing good antioxidants, anti-inflammatories with it so that you're protecting yourself at the same time that, you know, there could be some damaging stuff going in.
Yeah, okay, that's good advice. And of course, aside from barbecues, it's a lovely time of the year now with the heat to eat some nice healthy salads as well.
And I make salads with a lot of vegetables in it and I put fruits in. Mangoes are gorgeous in a salad and sometimes I'll chop pears. You can be putting in walnuts. So it's a great way. It doesn't have to be just a piece of lettuce and tomato. You know, mine are multicoloured and if you can challenge yourself to make the best multicoloured salad, you know, chopping in strawberries and, you know, I had Wexford strawberries yesterday. Oh my God, they were so sweet.
Amazing.
And again, if you start buying punnets of berries and you have mandarin oranges in, and your salads have a range of vegetable and fruit, I tend to put in avocados because they have good fats in them. So that when you're, and really that's a full meal on its own. When you then have a steak or chicken or fish done on a barbecue, when you're taking all this big, huge bowl of salad and you're eating it and it's beautiful. And I tend to put olive oil and either balsamic vinegar or lemon juice onto that salad, you know, rather than absolutely drowning it in dressings.
Actually, funny you should say that. I was just going to say that we associate salads with being healthy, but you see some of the salads that are pre-prepared in shops and they're full of like really mayonnaise-y coleslaw and loads of fatty stuff at the same time. So not every salad is necessarily healthy.
And then you can get away fine with having your coleslaw, but don't make that be the entire meal, you know. So add in those fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, fresh berries, you know, some nuts. It's seeds, you know, toasted sunflower and pumpkin seeds that you've already toasted and let them cool down. You know, when they're sprinkled into a salad and you get that crunch, you can make salads so interesting. People, I think, must think it's the same, that it's a boring meal. It's not, because you can do so much to it. And yet we grew up on bacon and cabbage and spud and nobody ever said, you've got too much of it, you know.
Yeah.
There was certain meals, people will eat porridge 7 days a week and they don't get bored. So, you know, you can make all these foods really interesting and nice.
Yeah, it's up to yourself.
And baked potatoes, I love baked potatoes. You know, when you put it into the foil and you have it, say, baked in an oven, bring it out to the barbecue, you know, then it's just staying hot. And, you know, you can put in some sour cream or butter. You know, I'm not afraid of those good fats. We were reared on good fats and the body needs the good fats because every cell membrane in your body is made from fat. So when you have butter, real butter, and you have the cream or the sour cream and you have some of the fat from the meats and the fish, your cell membrane, every single cell in your body is surrounded in fat. So we have to replace that and you want to replace that with high quality fats.
Okay, well, we better move on to the topic you wanted to touch on today, and that is food and fertility for people out there who maybe are trying to start a family. Is there a strong connection between what you eat and your chances of conceiving?
Yes, there is. And the reason is, you know, years ago there might have been some people with infertility. And age, of course, has a part to play. The younger you're trying to get pregnant, the
better.
The better it is. And, you know, between the ages of, say, 20s and 30s, you know, you're trying to get pregnant, you have an 80% chance. By the time you're over 40, the chances go down because the eggs are older, your body is older, your metabolism is after shifting. But the big link to food, I suppose, is you've heard me talk about insulin resistance. And when you're on a higher starch diet, the higher insulin levels, they interfere with the way the ovary is going to release an egg. So this egg has to be released to be fertilised. And when you look at fertility figures coming now with Safe America, they'll say that, you know, when you're looking at doing all the investigations to see is there any, you know, blockages, had you a burst appendix that interfered with a, you know, a fallopian tube, all those things have to be ruled out as an issue. And then after that, and they say there is no structural issue here, then you have to look, and they say 30% of the issue is with women, 30% are with men, and 30% are men and women, both have an implication. So we know we need a healthy egg, but those eggs are with you since you were born. And they're going to run out if you don't get on top of it earlier. And you can't, say, 45, think, oh, my egg is as healthy as it was, or have I enough of them? Because at this point, you've run out. When you look at men, give them 3 months of good nutrition. You know, maybe a cod liver oil with good vitamin A and essential fats, and increasing zinc levels, and, you know, changing their diet so they're not in that high starch with high insulin and with inflammation problems. So when men have more inflammation, it interferes with, say, a sperm count. So, but men can recover much faster. Once you start working with men, within about 3 months, it's almost like a whole new set of building blocks that they have. And then, therefore, that can correct really fast. But with women, you have to look at what are the issues. So we see some people with endometriosis. That's strongly an inflammatory process. So we have to start reducing the inflammation in that person. So going on an anti-inflammatory diet, increasing antioxidants. For the people with polycystic ovaries, which is linked back to insulin resistance, you have to see that as being a dietary intervention that has to happen to help you to increase the way your egg can be released. So the more carbohydrate and starchy foods you eat, the more insulin you produce. And when you start getting insulin resistance, if we don't correct that, you're going to just find it harder to get those eggs out to be fertilized. While it sounds really, really simple, a lot of people with polycystic ovaries just need to change their diet, you know, increase your exercise, get down the weight, especially the belly weight and the belly fat. So belly fat in men and women is a sign of insulin resistance. Both will be producing inflammation chemicals in there because of that. So you look at what nutrition would you need to help balance everything, right? So I will often advise people to take chromium, especially when they've sugar cravings and a lot of insulin resistance. But I tend to sit down with people and say, look, what's going on? What's going on in your system? What are you eating? What is the result? Is there belly fat? There's a lot of people with testosterone issues. There's a lot of women that are producing too much testosterone, less testosterone and sperm producing. And we have them with more estrogen. And that's coming from the belly fat. There's an enzyme made by belly fat. It's called aromatase. People can look it up. The aromatase enzyme is converting the testosterone into
estrogen.
You don't want that to happen. You want virile men, you know. And if I go back to animals and vets, you know, they look at people, they're looking at the animals and they're saying, I want this bull that's coming into the field and I want him with a high testosterone. That's why he has a ring in his nose and he's in the field on his own, because you want that high testosterone. And there's a reason, because then he's productive. But at the same time, you want the women to have the estrogen spikes that are coming so that the egg gets released. So in both parties, you're going to be looking at what's happening and what is the, let me call it, the high carbohydrate or high starch diet, the insulin resistance. Where is that interfering with the hormones that's linking back to fertility? So anti-inflammatory diet, low carbohydrate diet, replacing nutrients that may be a factor. And I suppose when I'm here talking about it, I have people asking me to cover it because it's an issue.
You're seeing it every day.
I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
And you know, even I have people coming in, say the grandparents who produced 10, 12, 15 children without issue. It was like, can we stop it even? Do you know, this was back then. And now you're seeing one or two kids or three kids in a family and you're seeing lots of people having difficulties with conception. It is a natural process. You should just fall into getting pregnant. It should just happen. But if you've spent a whole year trying and not stopping it in any way, and you've just decided not to stop it in any way, then pregnancy should occur. And when it doesn't occur in that year, then people are going looking at assisted fertility or, you know, IVFs and all the different programs that are out there to help. But people are looking for that because it's not naturally happening. So you have to look and say, what's going on in the person, right? What's going on in the couple? Yeah.
So it kind of all comes back to diet, like most things do in this life. And of course, the amount of processed food we're all eating, all of those are factors. We should say this, Anne, and we'll go to a break in a second, but it goes without saying that you need to look at your alcohol content, your smoking, recreational drugs, habits, all of those things if you're trying to start a family.
Absolutely. You know, toxicity is one of the major things. And we actually know that in the environment, there are what's called xenoestrogens. And those xenoestrogens are endocrine disruptors. So the hormonal patterns that we have, you know, there's messages coming from the brain down to the ovaries, release the egg. There's messages coming from the testes, you know, make the sperm. And we have ability because of endometriosis. The fluid in your belly that all your organs are sitting in, your peritoneal fluid, can be inflamed. That inflammation, and that can even be triggered from a leaky gut. You know, they now know that stuff is leaking out from the leaky gut into that peritoneal fluid, and then endometrial tissue comes out and it lodges and sets up a colony, or it grows out in other areas. So we have a lot of people suffering terrible bad period pains and everything from endometriosis, and it can interfere with fertility. Again, it's an inflammatory condition. You got to reduce the inflammation. I know we have to go to a break.
We do have to go to a break, Anne. Just to remind people, we have some questions for you, but if you want to ask Anne anything, it doesn't necessarily have to be related to fertility. If you have a general food query for her, text it through to us on 083 300 3300. We'll be back.
Nutrition advice on Talk About in association with Anne D'Arcy and the All Therapy Centre Tralee.
Welcome back. We are with Anne D'Arcy, nutritional therapist, and she was talking there with us a little bit about fertility and the connection between what you eat and your chances of conceiving. We're going to move on now to some questions. Here's a good one, Anne, that I think a lot of people can relate to. A listener says, I was wondering, could you ask Anne about coffee? They say coffee can be good for you and has its advantages, but what is the safest amount of cups of coffee to have, and does it matter if it's coffee from a jar or ground coffee?
Well, I love coffee and I'm a ground coffee snob, I suppose. I try and buy it organic where I can. That's what I use at home when I'm at home. How much is too much? If your heart is racing from coffee, like some people are, they get palpitations, then it is too stimulating for that person. I know other people who get up early to have a cup of coffee because then they actually go off, go to the toilet, move their bowel, and they use it as a stimulus for their gut. So coffee, by its nature, can be overstimulating. It can be something that creates an adrenal stress for one person and not for another person. So in all honesty, I would probably drink four mugs of coffee. But I will make a pot with a, you know, the little plunger pots, and I could drink the whole thing with my breakfast. So I'm not the right one to ask, because I do drink a lot of coffee. If you like your coffee and it's not hindering you, then it's okay. And, you know, for example, if you are somebody with kidney problems and you're watching your potassium levels, you know, even at that, the coffee can be a trigger for you. So because we are all so individual, we have so many other things going on, you know, if you're eating well-balanced diet, you will handle that coffee. If you have it and your blood sugar drops every time and it has you eating sweets because of it, then you're having too much coffee and it's dropping your blood sugar. So again, how long is a piece of string is what I'd say on that one. It's so individual, you have to decide, is that coffee good for you or not?
And is there any difference between, we'll say, drinking strong tea and drinking weak tea, or does it make any difference at all?
You know what, tea and coffee both have caffeine unless you're buying the decaffeinated, and it can have that stimulating effect. A weak tea is going to have much less of the caffeine in it. But tea, by its nature, has L-theanine, which is calming. So when people say, oh my God, I had to have a cup of tea, I'm so stressed, L-theanine is in tea.
There's something in that.
Black tea. Yeah. So L-theanine is a GABA agonist. It actually helps you to get more GABA in your system, which is the calming brain chemical that relaxes you. So when people say, I'm calmer after a cup of tea, then they usually are. And people will say, oh, I needed the coffee to get me going, because it does have that stimulus effect. You don't want to stimulate with coffee late at night, or you'll be awake half the night. And you often will have a cup of tea at night to calm you. I can walk from the kitchen to the bedroom with a cup of tea on my way to bed and drink it.
Yeah, and yet all the conventional wisdom says don't have tea before bed.
Doesn't keep me awake.
Yeah, it doesn't keep me awake either, but I know lots of people that it does keep them awake.
Yeah, but maybe in my tea, and this is a Barry's tea bag, it's like, you know, it's like it doesn't keep me awake. And if anything, maybe my body takes that for the L-theanine that helps me to relax into sleep.
Yeah.
So again, it's all individual.
Would you have decaf?
No,
regular berries, tea. Yeah, same as myself. Yeah. And funny you should mention GABA, because someone just rang in from North Kerry and they asked if GABA can be found in Ireland and if it's safe to take. Remind us again what GABA is.
GABA aminobutyric acid, and it's shortened down to GABA, and it goes into a receptor that calms the brain. When you want to sleep at night, you release GABA into a GABA receptor and it turns off the thinking brain. The person who's wide awake at night and can't turn off the thinking brain, you know, you get GABA into them, whether it's L-theanine or lemon balm. These are different herbs that help. So some of the calming formulas that are out there. We used to have GABA. Solgar had a GABA formula and that went off the market here, you know, quite some time ago. People are getting it. People order it. So you'll either use L-theanine or you'll use maybe lemon balm, or you'll access GABA somewhere else. But GABA is just a calming brain chemical.
A listener says, I'm in my early 50s. I have an underactive thyroid gland, but I suffer terribly with achy joints. Any tips to help?
Yeah, and an underactive thyroid can be for many reasons. Sometimes you don't have enough iodine. You need iodine. T4 is four iodines. You need selenium, which is in Brazil nuts, to help you take T4 and convert it into T3. T3 with three iodines is the active form of that thyroid hormone. Without having enough thyroid hormone, you're more sluggish. Your metabolism is poor. You can get tired and cold. Your hair can be falling out. And it also causes problems with fertility. So fertility, remember, you need good thyroid hormone to get pregnant. It's why the vets and the farmers have iodine licks and selenium licks for the animals to get. So you get enough iodine for fertility. But in her case, you want to either, if it's an autoimmune thyroid, you don't replace iodine. In that case, I'd say take selenium to help you convert that thyroid hormone. Selenium is in Brazil nuts, but it's also in onions and garlic. Essential fatty acids are for the receptors. You know when you plug a 3-pin plug into a socket and you want to make sure it's turned on? You know, those receptors are those sockets. So fish oils, like a good cod liver oil with vitamin A and D and the essential fats, or eating flaxseed or fatty fish, oily fish like mackerel, help those receptors so that hormone can be received to stimulate your thyroid. You may be already on thyroid hormone. I would say add selenium and a cod liver oil.
Okay. One final one, and a lot of people are asking about salads in various shapes or forms. The questions are coming, but mm-hmm. would you just tell us, like, if, for anyone out there who's going to have a salad for their dinner today or whatever, their lunch, their supper, what would you like to see them putting into it for maximum health?
Yeah, well, for my breakfast this morning, I had spinach, red onion, avocado, tomato, and then I had two boiled eggs with some olive oil and balsamic vinegar. For a dinner salad or a bigger meal salad, I like the avocado for the good healthy fats in it. I like that salad should be a way of you getting good olive oil into your system, because that is a good oil for your cell membranes. Then you can basically add anything you like. I think every salad, if you're doing a salad, you should have either egg, some kind of meat or chicken or fish, open a can of salmon, you know, open some sardines, have some leftover fish or meat or chicken.
Protein.
You know, cook enough of those meats when you're cooking them, knowing that it's going to be tomorrow's lunch as part of a salad. Onions are fantastic to put in. You know, mushrooms, I will cook my mushrooms and put them in, but other people eat raw mushrooms. But for me, I tend to cook my mushrooms and have some left over and put them in. Peppers are fantastic. They're high in vitamin C.
Tomatoes.
Like if you think of tomatoes, yes, great. Now, people who are getting very arthritic, some people aggravate the nightshade vegetables, the tomatoes and the peppers can aggravate, you know, the joints,
yeah.
Achy joints and stuff. So if you are getting achy joints from all the tomatoes and peppers that you've added in, then cut them down because you're not suiting them. Increase your fish oil so that you reduce your inflammation all over again. But pretty much anything. I love putting berries and fruits. Remember the colour of the rainbow. If you're looking in at that and you're seeing blueberries and strawberries and bits of pears and mandarins. Mandarins are great because they don't go off. Apples or pears going into a salad are going to go brown, so you want to eat it pretty quick. And I will use different kinds of lettuce. Baby spinach is fantastic because it doesn't wilt easily on you. And like I'm growing lettuce and spinach at home just because I want to be able to go out and pick that, have that fresh. And then I'll buy in the onions and the tomatoes. But you want it to be rich in colour. Because if it's rich in colour, it's rich in antioxidants. And when it's rich in antioxidants, they also are the anti-inflammatory food, so they're reducing inflammation. And the more bulk you have, and especially raw bulk, you're feeding the gut bacteria, you're getting a feeling of fullness, and it will curb the need to be having something sweet. And I use the balsamic vinegar, and I often use the syrupy one, and it gives that level of sweetness. That's fine.
It'll do you. Yeah. And just remind us before we let you go, because we're over time, you're in the All Therapy Clinic on Rock Street. You're here every Thursday.
I'm here every Thursday. So I'm at All Therapy Centre, 21 Rock Street. The number there is 066-718-5229. And my mobile is 087-775-9385. And I would say I've